Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Rob Sutton, the SDR show this week. Just a fucking badass dude. John Corabi, he was in The Scream. He was in The Dead Daisies, and he was briefly the lead singer of Motley Crue. They did him wrong in both The Dirt movie and The Pam and Tommy story, but just a great dude, really interesting guy, and we talk with him, and it's me and Don Jameson this week. Don't forget, we do the show live every single Wednesday, every single Saturday. You can watch live for free at thesdrshow.com/live, and if you're listening to this now, you can hear everything commercial-free and 5 days earlier, if for some reason you can't watch live, at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR when you subscribe. You get a 7-day free trial, 20% off, and access to every episode we've ever done of this show, which is about 7 years now. So you're going back like 300-plus episodes. Lots of amazing moments that you can peruse, along with 22 other shows. So it's really a lot of stuff going on at gasdigitalnetwork.com. And the free chat, the forums, and all that other stuff is all at gasdigitalnetwork.com. But really, all we care about is you spreading the love. Get people out there to know about the SDR show. Tell your friends, tell your family, hey, give it a shot, give it a listen. And this one right now is a fun listen. It is John Corabi on the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me in the co-host seat once again. Host of That Jameson Show, right? Is that what I'm calling him? Used to seeing it in the background. I'm not thinking off the top of my head. Don Jameson, how are you, buddy?
That's it. That Jameson Show on Compound Media. You've been a guest on there, and I'm excited to be here today with the mayor himself, John Corabi.
Yeah, I'm used to seeing a big banner behind you saying That Jameson Show, so it threw me for a bit. So that's what it is. So let's give this guy the intro he deserves, all right? Former singer of The Scream, Motley Crue, Union, The Dead Daisies. It's got the solo record, new book out called Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, new music out, the newest single called Your Own Worst Enemy. This is what I'll start with. Back in the day, I first saw him doing a Union show at, I want to say, Burchill. I could be wrong. Then we became, dare I say, friends. Dare I say it? From Shiprock days when he was in Rat, we became friendly. And then hosting M3 in Shiprock, I would see him over and over again. I remember one night specifically after an M3 show, sitting at the bar or lounge that everyone goes to. We just sat and had dinner and talked. And then the last time I saw him, my former co-host of my radio show, Lissa, opened for him when he was opening for Tom Kiefer somewhere in Pennsylvania. It is fucking John Corabi. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, brother. Thank you.
How do you like that intro? Did I do okay?
Yes, 40 minutes are up now, Ralph. Thanks.
Good talk, Russ.
Yeah, I mean, you really, by the way, you really are the term I've seen online over and over again, and I could not agree more, like a true rock and roll journeyman. You're just around all these other great people. People respect the shit out of you musically. And what's funny, on my old radio show, we had a thing called the six pack, which is we would do a radio interview around the second hour and the third hour, if the band would hang out, they would pick six songs that they wanted to hear, right? I would say a good 40 to 50% of the time, they would pick a song from the Motley Crue self-titled record over and over again, whether it was Misunderstood or it was fucking, you know, the first single, whatever. There was always something from the Uncle, is the other one, whatever. There is always love for that record and the first and the Scream record. So just amazed that you have been in and out of all these great bands over the years. It really is wild, John.
Thank you. Well, you know what's weird, dude? Like, I know a lot of people ask me why I've been in so many bands, you know, but it was just the cards that I was dealt. You know what I mean? Like, I, in all honesty, I would have hoped that, you know, we'd be talking about the, you know, 10th or 12th Scream album.
Right.
You know, but unfortunately shit happens. You know what I mean? I got the phone call to change. That would change anybody's life. You know,
you have herpes. That was the call, right? You have herpes.
That was, yes, that was the call.
And, very hurtful, Ralph. Very hurtful.
I know, pretty much. But you know what? That was a merit badge in Motley. I'm just going to say that.
Right. That just meant you qualified to be in Motley. Can I ask you on that, John? Were you working on a second Scream record when that call came in? Was the Scream disbanded? Like, what was the status of your headspace at that call?
No, to be honest with you, we were on tour. And a fan gave me a magazine that Nikki had done an interview in. And like, you know, over the years, you've read interviews. A lot of times the people that they're the person that's interviewing you will say, hey, any new bands that you're kind of into? Mm-hmm. And he just went on this diatribe about the Scream. And I literally just called to say thank you. And my thinking was initially that I knew at some point we were going to have to start working on material for a new record. Mm-hmm. I just called them to say, A, thank you. And if in any long shot form of way, Nikki would call me and talk with me, I was like, all I wanted to do was say, hey, dude, if you ever want to get together and jam or write something, maybe for their next record or my next record, that was the whole plan going in. And somehow I backed into that thing almost kind of very similar to Don's lens on his camera. Like it obviously backed into something.
Backed into something, right? That makes sense. So to my knowledge, there was no other singers up for the role at the time, right? It was they wanted you. You said yes, and that was it, or no?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I don't know for sure. Mm-hmm. I believe I was told that they had a few different people come down. I think Mark Turin went down. I think Sebastian Bach went down.
Oh, wow.
And I was told in some weird whatever that they had actually even jammed with Steve Perry, which I don't see at all. You know what I mean? I don't know how that would have worked.
You don't see Steve Perry singing Girls, Girls, Girls?
No, not really.
Just I was saying Open Arms is not singing Girls, Girls, Girls.
Maybe they changed the leg, open legs, whatever. But, you know, I don't know for sure who came down. Like, you know, I've talked to Mark Turin and Mark was like, yeah, you know, I went down and I jammed, but I couldn't do it. I was getting ready to do something else. And, you know, so I suggested you. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but it is what it is.
It also is amazing that it's fucking 30 years ago at this point, which is crazy that I'm sure regardless of the success or not success that you were going to have when you accepted the gig, I'm sure 30 years later being talking about it in any capacity, be it still in the band or not, would be like impossible to even conceive.
You know what? Not to get like Confucius here or anything, but honestly, like I don't really, you know, a lot of people ask if I would change anything or I would, you know, if I knew then what I know now and no. You know what I mean? Like the one thing that I can honestly, I will say it all day long. I'll say it till the day I take my last breath. If it wasn't for having the Motley gig, I don't know if I'd still be here and still be, you know, still have people that wanted to talk to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I look at it as, you know, as a blessing, everything that I've done. You know, I learned a little bit of it, you know, along the way with each different band that I was in. And I'm grateful to the time that I did have with Motley Crue. My biggest beef is just some of the fans just won't let it go.
You know, what's funny about that is I was thinking about how ridiculous it all is when I think I'm, you know, I'm 52, you're 63 or something like that. And the thought of like dudes our age just complaining about a singer in a band and what did this guy say? Like, it just seems so fucking high school stupid. Who the fuck cares? Move on. But on the flip side, that's why you can still play out because these people care so much.
Well, some, you know, some of them do. And, you know, I'm sure I have an equal number of detractors as well. But, you know, the funny thing to me is, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine about this with the age of, you know, iPhones and social media and computers and all this other shit. You know, it gives people the opportunity to say things and do things that they wouldn't do in your presence. You know, I still get emails like, you know, hey, you're a loser. You know, you didn't belong in Motley. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, meanwhile, sorry about that email, man. I was drinking that night.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, if you just got out of your mom's basement, you'd realize that Vince has been back for like 27 years. Let it go.
Well, here's the John, you know what the good thing is? The flip side of that, which is the good thing, is that it has that album has grown legs over the years. You know, it was an underappreciated album at the time, and now people have been able to go back and rediscover it. And I think that's really cool because it's shown that that album still stands the test of time, as opposed to like Van Halen 3 or, you know, some of the other one-off albums that came and went and never really came back again, but yours did.
Yeah, Hooligan's Holiday, by the way, was one of those songs I would play at strip clubs all the time. And girls would be like, what the fuck is this? It's so great. I'm like, no, it's Motley Crue. Like, what? Like, no one would ever even make the connection at the time, because the album, which while it launched well, there's that story that someone from the label said, if it doesn't hit number one, you guys are done. And you went to number five or six, like, oh, sorry, we only hit fucking six out of a million. It's crazy. But when I remember hearing that record and your voice, it just felt so great. The song that I felt that was not even on the record, it was like a throwaway song, because it was on Quaternary, was your like very Beatles-y song. Friends was such a great fucking song too.
That's cool. Thank you. Yeah, that was, you know, Bob Rock. Bob Rock, I think it was that whole brainchild of Quaternary was really, I got to thank Bob Rock for that, because I think it was just the point we were sitting in the room while he was trying to mix. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, if you can picture the energetic Tommy Lee and, you know, everybody's like, we're just the banter and all this other shit. And Bob was trying to focus on the music. And at one point, I think he just got tired of hearing us talk in the background and just act like a bunch of dumbasses. He just finally turned around. He goes, you know what? You know what I'd be really curious to see? If you guys would each go into an you're like, because we were at A&M, there was like a bunch of different rooms at A&M. Mm-hmm. He goes, I'd really like to see if you guys would just go into a room by yourselves, no help from the other members of the band, and I want you to write a solo song. Just, that's your homework. Go do that.
I thought Mick took the easy way out. He made an instrumental. I don't know. I felt like that was the...
Well, I love Mick to death, but have you ever heard him sing?
No, okay. But still, he could have tried something. You know, I don't know.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Let me ask, I mean, I want to get into the book and the new music and stuff too, but the question, I don't know, I've listened to a bunch of interviews. I never really heard this one asked, but so A, I think that you found out, like they told you Vince is coming back. It's not like it was a Mitch Malloy where he's in Van Halen and he watches them reunite on stage with David Lee Roth. They told you were leaving, right? They told you they were getting
rid. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There was a meeting at Nikki's house, and Alan Kovac, the manager, he came in and he was, you know, he's very frank. He goes, listen, man, I don't give a shit who's fronting this band. You know, and you got to go back and look at it from prior to me joining, I think a year before I joined, they had just signed a massive record deal with Elektra for like $40 or $50 million guaranteed money. And then like 6 months later, Motley calls Elektra and goes, oh yeah, hey, by the way, that, you know, the singer's out. And they're like, not what we paid for.
Right.
So they were always cool to me, but I don't think they were huge supporters from the beginning for obvious reasons.
Right. So you've been backed into the situation, which is appropriate for the way you went out.
Yeah. You know, and so Alan came to me and he said, here's the deal, dude. He goes, you know, no disrespect to you, but, you know, this isn't what the record label paid for. And his words were, I don't give a fuck if Paul McCartney was fronting this band. It's not what they paid for. They want Vince Neil or they're doing nothing. I understood that. And, you know, that was that.
But now here's my question. The day after that happens, John Corabi is home somewhere.
Freaking out.
How long did it take for you to find the chutzpah, as us Jews would say? Is it Jewish? I don't even know if it's Jewish. But to get up and say, okay, I'm going to now start figuring out what's next in the story of John Corabi.
It took a minute.
I would imagine.
You got to remember, well, first of all, I was freaking out because, you know, joining the band, my entire life changed. So I moved from a one-bedroom apartment with my wife and two kids and two dogs. I rented a house in Thousand Oaks, California, which if anybody's familiar with Thousand Oaks, it's not a cheap neighborhood. My kids were in schools. I had health insurance, cars, like,
crazy.
You know, nothing crazy, you know, but I'm sitting there now, like, unemployed, zero money coming in, going, fuck, what do I do now? But the thing was, for a little bit of time, you have to remember that Alan Kovac, once they told me I was out, he also said that I was going to have 8 or 9 songs on the record, and he wanted me to help them finish the album.
The Generation Swine one.
Yes. So I was going in, I was playing guitar, I was helping with any vocal melodies. A lot of the stuff that we wrote was, you know, it had already started being recorded. So they erased my vocals and they were having Vince go in and do stuff. But, you know, so I was kind of still busy. It wasn't until after that I was like, oh shit, now, well, fuck, what do I do now?
God, like, damn it. So
and
crazy.
And that's when, honestly, Nikki was the one. He was the figurehead in Union because he called Bruce Kulick, who he was very good friends with. And he said to Bruce, like, hey, you know, you and Krabby have a lot of the same influences, Zeppelin, Cream, the Beatles, like all this shit. You guys should jam. And then he called me and he said, same thing, you know, just reverse. So Bruce and I started talking to each other. I went down to his house, and I think the first day that we got together, we wrote a song called Around Again, which was on the first Union record.
So that was your first stint after Motley was Union?
Yes.
Okay. And I know Bruce had suggested not that long ago a new record or a potential of a new tour with the Union guys. Is that still potentially possible or no?
I, you know what? Honestly, in this day and age, you know how it is, dude. Like, you know,
well, you're releasing songs correctly now, by the way I tell bands to do it for years, which is release a single, then maybe a limited edition album. But I just mean Union as a band to go out and test the waters and see if people want to see Union again.
I think, well, see, we Bruce and I had discussed this a few years back, and somebody, I don't know if it was Frontiers or one of those labels, were like, hey, we'll give you guys some money if you, you know, put Union together. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Nobody's selling any records anymore. Guys like me, to get on a radio program, it's like I gotta have the Pope call for me. You know, so
who gives a fuck about radio anyway? I mean,
well,
really.
But you know, look, all I'm saying is that things are different now than they were when we first started. So I had suggested to Bruce and the guys, I said, listen, I wouldn't be against maybe putting a tour together, go rehearse, let's go out and do maybe a month's worth of dates, wherever, America, Europe, wherever, and see what kind of reaction we get. If we get a great reaction, then let's put a couple
of songs together. That's the right way to do it. I hope that happens, because that's the right way to fucking do it.
Yeah, well, they just, Ralph, they just re-released some of the Union stuff.
Yeah, the original stuff, right.
Yeah, on vinyl and everything. And the buzz was out there, man. So I think there's interest in there. That's another project that, again, like, people are still kind of rediscovering with you, man, which is so cool.
You know what's funny? Like, I was kind of laughing about this, and we'll go into detail in a little bit about the book title. But that's one of the things that's kind of funny about my career. Some of the turns and shit that I've taken is that I do these records, and at the time, they kind of get like, okay, like good reviews, like all this other shit. But it seems like it takes like 20 fucking years for the record to catch up with, or people to catch up with the record. And it's funny, every record I've done, the Scream, all the Motley shit, the Union shit, it's like now people are hearing it going, oh my God, this is great. So
we get it, John. You're ahead of your time. We get it. You're fucking ahead of your time.
So this new music that I'm releasing right now, my granddaughters are going to be
in 2042, man, people are going to be fucking flipping for this record for sure.
Yeah. He's like the bell bottoms of the music business. He's always coming back in style, man.
You know what's funny? So you then also, by the one of the bands I forgot to mention, you also played with Brides for a while, Brides of Destruction with Nikki Sixx. And just to kind of touch it, I know it's been fucking
a gazillion years,
a gazillion times talked about, but also that, you know, you're like one of the nicest guys in the world, and you and Nikki had a little bit of a beef about something stupid that you said, which I could not agree with more, that the Heroin Diaries was probably somewhat, you know, how well is your memory doing heroin, writing a book, you know? So maybe it's colored in a little bit, whatever. But the thing I always wanted to ask you was, have you ever read Norm Macdonald's autobiography? Because his whole autobiography is making fun of the fact that all autobiographies, you're relying on memory of 40 years ago. So his is total nonsense. It's a brilliant book worth reading, where maybe 40% of it is true and 60% of it isn't.
And you know what's funny? Like I think this is part of the reason why Nikki is so butthurt with me right now, for the last 10 years or so. But I wasn't taking a slag out of the book. I was like, hey, it's a good read. You know what I mean? Blah, 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 whatever. And to be honest with you, I've never done, like, people laugh, but I've never done coke, meth, heroin, like none of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So when the guy asked me, I don't know if the guy was baiting me or what the deal was. He asked me a question and I said, well, parts of the dirt were colored.
Right.
Oh yeah. Absolutely colored. And I said, so I would imagine.
By the way, I think the right term these days is African-Americanized, but fine. Sure.
Well, whatever. But this show will never be aired. I was saying to make it more interesting for the reader.
Right. It wasn't a dig. It was just.
A dig at all. I didn't mean it to be a dig. And he took offense to it. And I said, listen, dude, honestly, like I sent him an email back because we had this little beef via email, and he sent me this thing and he's like, I don't appreciate you fucking slagging my book and blah, blah, blah. And I just told him, I said, did you read the whole interview?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And then the second thing I said was, why do you give a fuck about anything I have to say?
Right.
And send. Done.
Right. He didn't have a talking penis in his book like Tommy did. Yeah. That would have made it a little bit more believable.
You know what's funny, by the way? I can tell you with 100% certainty that there's a little bit of mythology in Heroin Diaries. Why? I remember distinctly when reading it, he talked about going to Scores, where I was a DJ at, right? When the drinking age turned to 21 from 18, right? And the problem with that was Scores didn't open until 1990 and the drinking age changed in 86. So it's not even possible that he was there when that happened. So when I read that, I'm like, well, obviously this is not 100% factual because that's not true, you know? So there you
again,
go.
And this is something I said in the beginning of my book. Like, I'm telling stories Now, a lot of it is childhood shit. A lot of it is Motley stuff. A lot of it is Union, The Scream, The Dead Daisies, right, whatever. And I'm saying, this is how I remember everything.
For the better of most part, how the good fucking is memory, but what you remember, yeah, of course. And then I then for anyone to get mad at, that is insane to me. Like, I've interviewed Nikki a bunch of times. Fabulous interview. Love the guy. But, you know, to be upset about the fact that memories are not infallible is crazy. But it transitions us nicely to your book called Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. Your father named it, right? Which is a term, which basically means, as long as it's close enough, that's fine. I actually looked up the rules for horseshoes because I didn't know the rules for horseshoes to understand what that meant. But I get it for hand grenades.
Well, it was funny. I have to tell you, because my dad, God rest his soul, was like, he was a very nuts and bolts guy, old school Italian, like Roman Catholic. You go to work, you save your money, you pay your taxes, like, you know. And we had a couple conversations where he just said something to me in the most, he had the driest delivery. And like, for example, I was talking about Union and he's like, how's that Union band coming along? And I said, oh, you know, Dad, we're getting great reviews. You know, I don't know why, like after The Scream and even the Motley thing, I think this could be the one. I think my ship has finally come in. And my dad took a drag of his cigarette. And he goes, huh, ship's coming in, huh? I go, yep. He goes, well, if your ship comes in, don't be at the fucking airport. And I was like, okay. So when I was doing the acoustic record that I did a few years back, he called
great
me.
Great record, by the way. I love the Scream rendition on there and the Hooligans Holiday rendition on there. Both great. You know, I love that you reworked them that way. Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
Well, he was talking to me about the record and he was telling me how he liked when I did acoustic stuff because he could understand the lyrics. And and I said, yeah, I'm doing like a bunch of old songs that I feel like maybe didn't get their fair shake. And I've got a bunch of new stuff, like half and half. And he goes, what are you going to call the record? And I was kidding. And I said, I might call it John Corabi's Almost Greatest Hits. And he chuckled and he goes, or you could just call it Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. And I go, what does that mean?
You pocketed that, I guess.
Well, I go, what the fuck does that mean? And he goes, well, you know, you don't have to be on the money. You just got to be close. And I was like, okay, wow, what a great title. And I put it in my pocket thinking, if I do a record, I'll call it Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. But then when the option came up to do the book, after months and months and months of going back and forth with Paul Miles, the guy that wrote it with me.
Mm-hmm. He's from that Motley website thing, right?
Like, yes, Chronological Crew.
Yeah.
And I've known Paul forever. And I was in Australia in 2019. I did like 4 or 5 shows down there. And we were just sitting outside with all the guys in my band and we're bullshitting. And I was telling stories and they were asking me questions. And Paul was the one that said, you got to do a book, dude. Like, all the shit that you've done, you're still kind of a little bit of an enigma. Like, a lot of people don't know a lot about you. So I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. And finally we decided to do it. We went back and forth and back and forth, editing, re-editing, all this shit. And then it came time for the title. And I told Paul, I said, after reading the book and realizing that I've truly been the king of being at the right place, but always at the wrong time. Uh-huh. I go, I got to call this book Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. It's an honor of my dad, but it totally sums up my career. I've been close, awesome, but I've not been that guy where it's like it's funny. I tell some friends, I go, I'm one of those guys that if you're going to a thing and you're hanging out with your friends, you're like, oh, I'm going to go see John Corabi tonight at the, you know, Birch Hill. And they go, wait, why does that name sound familiar? You know, and then it's like they got to add 2 and 2 and 2 and 2 and 2 and get 4. But it's just whatever.
I just got the book yesterday. So I just started reading it. But it doesn't seem to be like a tell-all scandalous, holy shit, they're going to get pissed off book. It just seems like good stories from you your perspective of from when you were a kid up until not that long ago. Is that really a fair way to say it? You're not trying to ruffle any feathers with this.
No, I don't even really, honestly, at this point in my life, dude, I don't really give a shit about ruffling feathers or not. You know what right. I mean? It wasn't my intention to do that, but, and it's funny because I caught some flack from a few fans there. Once the book, they started doing the pre-orders, a few had started writing to me, asking me what the book was about. And I said, look, at the end of the day, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't already know. Like, there's no motley dirt in here that you're not aware of or whatever. I said, basically what this does is for all of those who know that I went through a lawsuit with Motley or went through Motley Crue or The Scream or Union, it's really just diving into what I was experiencing and what I was feeling as all this insanity was happening, how it affected my marriages, how it affected my kids, how it affected my well-being and my, you know, my insanity. So, you know, it's just really a look into my viewpoint of how I was handling certain things that were being thrown at me at the time.
Was there anything you agonized, I shouldn't put this in the book, and did or didn't? Or you just, whatever came up, you're like, yeah, it's got to go in. It's organic.
There was a few things that I probably could have embarrassed a few people with. But after going back and looking at it, I'm like, how does this affect the story?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Is this really little tidbit? Is this really detrimental to the book? Is it really detrimental to the story? And I just took a lot of shit out. I'm like, you know what? I'm fucking elaborating. Right. I'm just being an asshole now, or I'm just putting that in there to put it in there. And I just, right. you know what? It's not important.
Let me ask you this. From what I imagine, at least 10 to about 100, how many times am I mentioned in the book?
Oh, you're like 98 or 99, bro.
Okay.
After your beef with Nikki, did you ever considering calling it like the Fentanyl Diaries or something like that?
No, you know what, dude? It was like,
I'm just breaking your balls. You
no,
know, that.
No. It's
like, but the thing is with John is like,
how about Real Men Don't Write Diaries is the name of a book. That would be a good. Yeah.
But the thing is like with John is like dirt or not dirt or whatever. John's a great storyteller. If you ever see him play live acoustic,
sure.
That's almost a bigger part of the show is John's storytelling in between. So, you know, if you see what John does on stage, you know, he weaves a good tale.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And even that, like, you know, I kid with the audience, and I've kind of realized, like, over the years, even my dad and my uncle, they took me years ago when I was a kid. There was a place in New Jersey when I was a kid called the Latin Casino.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a place where, you know, like, you would go see Frank Sinatra, or you would go see Buddy Hackett or Vic Damone or any of those cats. A lot of mob guys hung out there. And I remember my dad and my uncle took me to go see, this is crazy. Like, a lot of people don't believe this, but I literally saw Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin together.
Wow. How old were you? Like 10? So
14,
oh,
I think.
That's crazy.
15. And I wanted to get into the music, and I went and I saw the show, and I have to be honest with you. It had to have been one of the funniest fucking shows I've ever seen in my life. And the lesson I took from it was my uncle and my dad both said it. They're like, if somebody wants to listen to the record, they can put the record on, drop the needle, and they save the money on the gas. The t-shirts, right. The fucking bullshit. They want to be entertained. They want to hear the stories. They want to see the jokes. They want to see this thing. And there was so much fucking hilarious banter between Frank and Dean that night.
That's crazy.
Like, wow. So a lot of my stories, they're kind of true, and I color the shit out of them. I have fun with it. and it's only to get a laugh out of people.
Right.
You know,
that's great. I mean, I saw it, as we said, I've seen you live maybe 24 times over the years, but with different bands and stuff. But the last time I saw you, you were doing your solo acoustic gig. It was when the acoustic record came out, I think, is when I saw you.
It's been a while, buddy.
Of all the bands you've been in, which one? I know Union technically never broke up, but not saying that, which band were you in the longest of them all? And which one did you enjoy the most?
Dead Daisies was the longest.
No,
actually, I was probably in the Daisies and Motley around the same amount of time. It was like, okay, it was almost 5 years for both.
Okay. And which one was your, from beginning to end, the most enjoyable experience? Because Motley may have started out the most enjoyable, but probably didn't end as the most enjoyable.
No, but you know what, dude? Like, again, it's that regrets thing that I was saying earlier. Like, I learned something from every band that I've ever been in. And, it, you know,
You were in Rat for like 3 or 4 years, weren't you?
I was in Rat 8.
Well, there you go. So then Rat's the longest.
Well, when you say what band were you in, I don't really consider Rat. I was just like
a hired gun. Guy, right,
a right, hired right. gun. You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't really consider that. I didn't contribute anything,
right.
You know, at all. So, you know, but I learned something from every band that I've ever been in. And, you know, so each one, like, for example, The Scream, that was like getting laid in the backseat of your car for the first time. Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
That's cool. That's cool. That's such a good fucking record, too. God damn it.
That was the first of everything. Our first record deal, our first trip to England, our first tour bus, our first tour. So that's always going to go down as the first. Right. Motley was just 5 years of just complete fucking insanity. And then Union, you know, I loved everybody in Union. I thought everybody was, you know, a good dude, great players. I think we, you know, and I still think it, like, I think it was a really just kind of underrated, under the radar band.
Right.
Dead Daisies as well. Like, I loved being in the band. It was killer. I had a great time with the guys.
It's kind of a revolving door, that band.
Five
anyway.
Star hotels.
yeah, that guy's pretty wealthy, right? And nowadays, if I'm not mistaken, in your current lineup, your son is playing drums in your band, which has got to be exciting.
Yeah, Ian's been with me for God, since 2014, 13, Whoa. 14. He's been with me a while. But obviously, we started taking off, and then I got the call to do the Daisies. I went and I did that, which allowed me zero time to do anything else with any, you know, my solo band. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm just, like I said, I want to get 3, 4, 5 songs out, and I want to start putting a band together, and I want to get out, and I want to start making music again with a full band.
And you have the conversation if you have to fire your son. That ain't going to be fun.
No. Ian's there, dude. It's his gig. You know, he's actually doing all right. He's got a band that he plays with called Rehab.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing his own thing. He really likes it. Once I start putting a band together, obviously he's the first person I'm going to call.
Right.
And if he can do it, great. And whoever comes in and plays drums is going to have to know, like, hey, my kid, when he's free, it's his gig. You're just filling in, whatever.
Did I see that you're doing dates? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you have to get rid of your son, just have Alan Kovac do it.
Yeah, exactly. They're just, you know, the grim reaper of managers.
All right, before we go any further, if you are an auto mechanic or maybe just some do-it-yourself guy who likes to work on his own cars, I am talking to you, and I'm talking about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. They are your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. RockAuto.com has been in business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order parts, don't even know what you're talking about, and then if they even do find what you need, they'll still hassle you with all those storefront markups. But never at RockAuto.com. You can easily find everything you need, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or someone just working on their own car, everyone has access to the same incredible pricing all at rockauto.com. So if you're a car guy or girl, right now head over to rockauto.com and check out all the parts available for your car. You're going to have so much fun just perusing and looking at the car parts. They're so confident in their pricing, there is no promo code. Just get the same access to all the same incredible pricing for everyone at rockauto.com. But when you do make a purchase, tell them you heard about them on the SDR show. rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. Did I see that you're doing a bunch of dates in Australia, or is it in June, or am I wrong with that?
No, I'm actually leaving. I'm doing this thing in Nashville the end of this month called Creature Fest. Mm-hmm. I play the 27th and the 28th. And then I believe, I'm not sure, I haven't received my ticket yet, but I'm either leaving the 29th or 30th for Australia. And my first show is on the 2nd in Sydney.
That's great. That's exciting. And I'm sure you're doing a little bit of everything, right? You know, the new stuff, because you have two singles out so far. Casa Bella came out towards the end of last year, and Your Own Worst Enemy is like not that long ago. Excuse me. But you're going to do a little bit from everything. At this point, I mean, people probably expect that. I know 1 year you toured on the full Motley record, but nowadays I think people want to hear a smattering. Is that fair enough?
Well, you know what's funny? I did the Motley thing for... And that was a complete accident, because I wasn't paying any fucking attention at all. I was in actually doing a show in Nashville. And this dear friend of ours, Brandy Goldsboro, she yelled up, kidding with me. She goes, "Happy anniversary." And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm looking around like, who's
that's how she talks, by the way.
Yeah. "Happy anniversary."
I know, Brandy.
Yes. So we're sitting there bullshitting, and I'm looking around like, what the fuck? So I go, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "Your Motley record came out today, 20 years ago."
Wow.
So I talked to the guys. Everybody wanted to do it. They're like, "Oh, we should go do some shows." And my manager was, he was 100% for it. So I did the shows, but it was weird. Like, I would get done doing the shows. It's advertised as Motley 94 record in its entirety, blah, blah, blah. And then I would go sign stuff at the table, and fans would come up to me and go, "Man, I'm kind of bummed out you didn't do Man in the Moon," or "I'm kind of bummed out you didn't do Your Own Thing by Union," or, right, you know, whatever. So I just called my agents and everybody, and I said, "I'm done. I've put it to bed. I recorded a live version of it. If anybody wants to hear the Motley 94 record live, they can buy the record. I'm never doing it again."
Yeah, and you're never going to make everyone happy anyway. So it's just fucking, you got it out of the system and it's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I'd like to hear a smattering when I go. Like, that's why I would love if you and Union toured, you could do some 80s Kiss that never gets played ever anywhere. You could do some Motley. You could do Union. It would be fucking exciting as shit to me.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if you go back and look at it, I mean, I've got, fuck, Scream record, a couple of Motley records, a couple Union records,
Dead Daisies,
a couple of solo records. Yeah. I've got three or four Dead Daisies records. And I'm like, I've got enough material. I could probably go out and do a 3 or 4 hour set. And, you know,
yeah.
So I just, you know, I want to play my new stuff. I want to just kind of give everybody a little bit of everything, call it a day, and, you know, go have a Jameson at the bar.
All right. A Don Jameson. You know, what's funny is that,
well, you'll find me. Let me clear that up. That sounded really weird.
No, I get it. You guys, well, before we started, you talked about how you guys shoot porn together. I get it. I understand. It's fine. It's 2022. You can be open with your sexuality. Don't be so hung up.
There's things on the Monsters of Rock cruise that he couldn't put in his book that he and I got into. You don't even want to hear about.
I'm sure. Is Larry still your manager, John?
No. I'm. You know what? I'm kind of. I'm working with a guy that used to work with me. Fucking the very beginning. He actually was the brainchild of the Scream. A guy named John Greenberg. So. And to be honest with you, like, again, in this day and age, really, like, who needs a manager? John's just kind of guiding me. Yeah. Like, when I start getting my ass in an uproar about shit, he goes, dude, seriously, lighten up. And I go, right. Okay, whatever.
I mean, just like with the Motley stuff, you should. I know it could be annoying to talk about, but on the flip side, the fact that 30 years later, people are so into every fucking nuance of how that went down, you should kind of be cool. Like, well, that's fucking kind of weird and cool in a way.
Well, again, these are things that you can't control. Right. I have, it's just for some apparent reason, I'm that guy. This is how it played out. This is what it is. And I'm just rolling with the flow, buddy.
You know, that's what's funny? As much as it angered me on how they did you so dirty in both the Dirt TV show and the Tommy and Pam show, I can't imagine that had to bother you. It fucking bothered me. And that's ridiculous that it angered me so much, you know?
My biggest thing with the Dirt, and I've said this publicly, I just wish they would have just kept me out of it altogether.
Yeah, they could have just, that scene could have just been left out if you're going to do it that way. It makes sense. Same thing with the Tommy and Pam thing.
Everybody talks about the, you know, the guy, I don't even know the guy, like whoever it is that played me in the movie, you know, they're like, oh, he doesn't speak. He just kind of rambles around, blah, blah, blah. My biggest beef is, if you remember, they made it look like the band was, when they were walking on stage, they made it look like it was a fucking high school gymnasium. And there was like six people in the audience. And as bad as things were, it was never that bad.
Right, right. And, but also, I just feel like, I don't know, it's such a shitty way to handle it on both shows. Just leave it out. It would have shortened the movie by fucking 45 seconds or the series. It makes no sense.
The Tommy and Pam thing was that I'm sorry, that was just a complete joke from the get-go. It was like, it was unwatchable. Although I will say the girl
I enjoyed watching because she was so fucking hot. That girl, I could watch that all day.
She did a pretty good job. Well, I'm actually, oddly enough, I was a fan of hers. She did a movie with, and it's weird because if you set them side by side, the same girl, if you put a picture of her from the Tommy and Pam series,
right.
And she did a movie with Gary Oldman where he plays Winston Churchill.
Okay.
I think it's called The Darkest Hour.
Yep.
And she was his secretary, his assistant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow, she's kind of cute, like very proper English. Da, da, da. And then when I saw that she was going to play Pam, I went back and I looked at her. It, like from The Darkest Hour, like an image of her, I'm like, how the fuck are they going to pull this off? But when I saw it, I was like, holy shit.
They really nailed her. Speaking of it, I would love to have nailed her. She looked great. She looked really amazing. And then also,
you're not following Tommy Lee, dude.
In so many ways. Just a last question, then we'll do some plugs and stuff and ask the first. But at one point, you did record two songs for Mick Mars's record. Who now he has Jacob Bunton and from he did Adler's Band and he had his own solo band. Probably know that guy for years. But are your songs no longer a part of it? Did he re-record it, or you don't even know?
No, I don't believe that they were ever going to be a part of the record. I think what Mick needed to do, and I don't know how business works, but I think that Mick trademarked. I think it was for a record label, his own imprint record label.
Mm-hmm.
And he had trademarked 1313 Records. And he had to do something or he was going to lose the trademark.
Okay.
So he called me up and he goes, Crab, and in all honesty, we talked about doing some writing and recording together. But unfortunately, he started with the final tour. I was out with the Dead Daisies and we could never make the schedule work. So I just went in. I had like, it was in January. We were getting ready to start a record, or I think we were mixing a live album, and I had some time off and Mick called me and said, hey dude, I'm going to lose this trademark. Can you come in and sing these two songs? I said, sure. I went in, I sang them. And as long as he put them out, on, he put snippets of them out.
He got to keep the trademark. Oh, that's cool.
Keep his trademark thing going for whatever.
So those songs are somewhere, but they never were released.
Yeah, they're and probably won't be.
Right.
I've read a few things that Mick said, I'm not going to use those tunes.
Right. Like the damn Yankees third record that just exists somewhere that nobody knows and they never heard it. That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. All right, before we go one step further, let me tell you about one of our longtime sponsors. We're talking about Yokratom, yokratom.com. It's just easy to remember this. They are the home of the $60 kilo. So everywhere else you hear prices are going up. Gas, I heard it's like, what, $5 a gallon? Meat prices, rent, everything is just fucking up the wazoo, but not at yokratom.com. They have kept it at a $60 kilo. $60 kilos of all their custom curated kratom, high quality kratom at wholesale prices, direct to you. Custom blends, unique strains, no more wondering about how long it's been sitting around. It's all just direct to you at yokratom.com. Yokratom.com is home of the $60 kilo. They've been sponsoring the Gas Digital Network. They're sponsors of the Skank Fest and all these other good stuff here happening at Gas Digital. And plus, it's just cool buying shit in kilos at $60 a kilo for all those strains of Kratom. So if you're a fan of Kratom, head over to yokratom.com and get yourself stocked up on those $60 kilos. All right, let's get back into it. All right, so we're going to do the first now, Shannon, because we don't have much time left with this man.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest that since the dawn of time their first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We start with rock and roll. And we mean the first concert you went to on your own volition. So not the Frank Sinatra one, because your parents took you. The one that you went to said, I want to go see this show.
Bachman Turner Overdrive at the Philadelphia Convention Center.
How old were you?
15.
Were you already playing music at that point?
Yeah, I had a little side cover band. I was trying to break into that new whole New Jersey, South Jersey, New York cover club scene. And obviously Bachman Turner Overdrive was happening with, they had a song called Let It Ride. And what was the other one? Taking Care of Business and all that shit. And but it was weird because also on the bill, Bachman Turner Overdrive were the headliners. The band that went on right before them was a band called Wet Willie from Georgia,
okay,
who had a song called Keep On Smiling. You guys are younger than I am, but if you look that up, Wet Willie, Keep On Smiling, as soon as you hear the song, you'll remember it.
Okay.
And then there was this unknown cat, was the number three low man on the totem pole. Some dude that I probably won't amount to anything, but his name was Bob Seger.
Oh, what a fucking loser that guy is, right? Come on now. That's wild.
What's he done lately? Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Okay, and so now the first drug you ever did, I know you say you don't really do any drugs, but did you ever try any drug at all?
Well, obviously we did the weed thing back.
Yeah, but after weed.
I think the first drug that I did was with my son's mother.
Now, if it was with your son, that'd be a more interesting story, but your son's mother.
Yeah, no, it was my son's mother. I was a little bit of a hellion, as you will read in the book. I was living with my uncle. I started dating my guitar player's sister and we really liked each other. I called my uncle one night. I go, hey, I'm just going to kind of hang out here at Val's house and we're just going to, I'm going to stay over. And he was like, okay, man. All right. Well, take it easy. No drugs. Or I'm like, okay. No worries. And I don't think I hung the phone up. She had already started rolling a joint and we both took a Quaalude. If anybody remembers.
That's a very 70s drug. Yes.
Yep. Couple Roar 714s. And we both took a Quaalude, smoked a joint. We put on a stack of Led Zeppelin records and laid on the floor and just fucked like it was our job.
All right. Well, that's a good story, sir. That's the kind of story you want to hear about drugs. And now that segues nicely into the first time you had sex.
It would be that night.
Oh, that's great. I love when that happens.
I was killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, that's so cool. I'm waiting for the day when somebody has the hat trick and all three happen on the first, you know, the same concert.
You know what's funny, dude? It was so weird. Like, a lot of people were like, wait, you didn't have sex until you were fucking 17? I'm like, no. I was in school, and I don't know if anybody's Catholic here, but if you remember the old Catholic May procession lines they used to do in school.
I'm a Jew boy, so I can't relate.
I was always the first guy in the line because they went shortest to the tallest. So I was like, by the time I got into high school, I was like cousin it. I was like, you know, 3.5 feet tall, all hair. And I just walked around with a guitar and smoked weed in my fucking, in high school, whatever. So I'd go over to these girls, like these cheerleaders and shit. And I'm like, hey man, you want to go out sometime? And they're like, looking down at me like, no, I'm going to pass. So, you know.
So that Quaalude weed Zeppelin night with the chick, did you go into it knowing we're going to have sex? It's all, we're setting this up for this, or it just kind of happened?
Yeah, we kind of worked up to that. You know what I mean? Whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Sometimes we ask this one, which I'm just going to throw it out there because it's fascinating to me. A term that we coined rock star sex. So the first time that you remember a girl came and had sex with you because you were John Corabi from, whether it be The Scream or Motley or whatever, that first, like, almost like groupie girl sought after you rock star experience. Do you remember it?
Oh God. Well, I will say this. When I was with Motley, obviously,
I'm sure
everything was a completely different level of just insanity. And I remember going to, we did a promo tour and we did, Munich, Germany, Madrid, Milan,
all Paris, the M cities,
Paris and London.
Mm-hmm.
And we had all this press. And I remember when we got to Milan, they had a radio contest. We did this thing at a club where, you know, the videos were out and the record. And so they were playing the record the whole time and then the video for Hooligans Holiday. And then we just literally showed up and did a Q&A. And it was fucked. There was like 500 people in this club.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, we did that. It was complete insanity. I think the fans literally destroyed the club when we were done with it, when we left. But they took us to a club in Milan called, I believe it was called Shocking. That was the name of the club. And there was a downstairs and an upstairs. And we had the whole balcony. And Milan, obviously being one of the fashion capitals of the world, when we walked onto this balcony, they had food and booze. If you walked four steps in any direction, there was like pots of champagne and whiskey and vodka and food and fruit and all this other shit. And there was probably 500 models from all over the world.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
And it was crazy because like they were all like fucking really young. And I just remember sitting
now there. You're speaking my language. You see my ears stuck up. Going,
I'm sitting there looking at these girls, you know, and I have a prerequisite now. Like when I meet women, I'll sit. They're like, hi, how are you? And I'm like, hey, do you know who Paul McCartney is? And if they say yes, then I'm like, okay, we can talk. But,
you hear that, 16-year-old girls out there? Look up Paul McCartney next time you meet John Corabi. You can lie your way in.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting trip.
I would imagine so.
That would explain the chapter in your book, The Night I Did 500 Models in Milan.
Yeah, exactly.
The night I contracted Italian herpes.
Yeah.
All right. So the new book is called Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. The newest single is Your Own Worst Enemy. You could follow you on the social media on Instagram, John Karabi Official. And by the way, happy belated birthday. It was a couple of weeks ago. So happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else we didn't plug that you want to plug? Oh, and the dates in Australia in June, obviously. Anything else?
It's 2-for-1 hot dogs at 7-Eleven. I'm just saying.
Right. By the way, I was craving a fucking hot dog.
Only when John's working, though. Only when John works.
Yeah. Don, your plugs?
That Jameson Show, Compound Media, every Tuesday night. And hit me up on Instagram, Don Jameson Official.
Okay, Shannon, your plugs.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982. Listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, porn stars, and they tell their own personal accounts of their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Shannon, do you know who Paul McCartney is?
Yes, I'm 100 John. Years old.
You had me at porn stars.
John, we asked this question because it's a good way. Don, you can clock in your answer, but John, do not give any indication. Does John Karabi believe in ghosts? Don't respond yet, John. Don, does John Karabi believe in ghosts?
He does not.
Shannon.
I was just going to take a wild stab and say yes, but I feel like Don knows him. And Don maybe already knows the answer. I'm going to stick with my gut and say yes in some form.
I'm going yes in some form. Let's see. John, what's the answer?
Yeah, actually. And if I have a minute, I'd tell you this right now. Anybody who knows me knows I've been married like 3 times. I had a weird experience with my second wife, who I think, Ralph, you remember.
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah. And I had a thing where her and I were just fucking, we were both insane, but she was cheating on me. And I
with
had
a ghost?
No. Oh, I had an experience though, where I got up, I went to sleep and I had a dream that her grandmother and my mother came to me and they were sitting me down to have a talk like, okay, here's the deal. You need to kick that bitch to the curb because this is what's happening. So I woke up for a minute. I went back to sleep. I got up the next morning and I called her to tell her exactly what happened, exactly all this shit and who she was cheating on me with. And She later told me that I was absolutely positively correct.
Wow. That
it was the weirdest fucking thing that I've ever seen. And the other thing is when I had this dream, I woke up and I had a cat. And the cat was freaking out. He was running around and he would just stop and he would stare at the ceiling. And then he would run around again and it'd stop and stare at the ceiling. So I was like, okay, I think I might have been visited to my mom and her grandmother to give me a little advice.
It's nice that her grandmother was on your side and not her granddaughter's side. That's cool.
I adored her grandmother, and it was funny because her grandmother passed away and she was kind of losing her wits about her. But it was funny, even my wife's at the time, her father was like, every person that went into her room, she was at in a hospital, and every person that went into the room, every male that went into the room, she thought it was me.
Oh,
for some weird reason,
She felt the real connection to you.
A connection to this woman, and then it was funny. I had that dream, and it was my mother and her grandmother came and told me what she was doing and who she was doing it with, and I called her out on it the next day, and it was trippy.
And ghost the moral of the story. Go ahead. Sorry, Don.
I was just a ghost intervention.
Yeah. I was going to say the moral of the story is Shannon knows John Karabi better than Don Jameson does, apparently.
That's true.
All right. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast on health and wellness called The Good Sugar Podcast. We're opening up our first location in June.
You have health and wellness?
Yes, dude.
Well, I want my money back.
With our podcast is in the top 100, you son of a bitch. But we're opening up a store in June. That show comes out every Monday. We add a song every week to our playlist. We'll do the sdrshow.com/playlist. We'll add Your Own Worst Enemy, the new John Karabi single. And John, honestly, I mean, I've known you now fucking 20 something years. So thank you so much for coming on. You're always just a cool fucking dude.
Anytime, buddy.
All right. We'll see you next time on the SDR show.
I hope so.